the yesterday show, but you don't know that. Well, maybe you do. By now, I hope you know that we've been running the stream not just 24 hours behind, but you can pick it up right at noon. Casey takes the recording, turns it on by about 12:05. So really, you're only 3 hours behind. It's actually been a very practical, to be honest, under some technical duress that started on Monday, that has worked out pretty good. And Case, what do you think? You got that computer set for Monday? Do you think we'll be back? Maybe. We'll see. yeah. Oh, good. Okay. All right. So I think we should be okay for Monday back live. Fun weekend. I know that we're all completely obsessed now in Derby mode. And by the way, for those of you that are so inclined, last night at, I think, 1 a.m., I think the announcement went up at Thorograph, the probables for Derby Oaks available at Thorograph. And so peruse those. And I'll tell you this. From a figure standpoint, if you're inclined in this direction, and I certainly am, this group is exceedingly compact. And there's going to be some very, very tricky reads. If you were hoping that a delineation was going to come from something like Thorograph's the figs with the Derby, I'm not so sure. There's all that much more learning. If anything, in fact, you're going to see some numbers on horses that is only going to make it a little bit more difficult to eliminate. That I was surprised, actually. I was surprised that there were a few horses that are not as easy to eliminate, if you are a figure user. And so, fold in pace and fold in some gate information, and we'll go from there. We are getting close to that portion. On the Philly side, things were a little bit more distinct when it came to a strata. I mean, I don't want to get, it's not fair for me to completely, give away all the, that's why, it's $25 for the package, by the way, for the Thorograph probables. And actually, Jerry went deep into the bench, actually. He pretty much went all the way down the list of point scorers that are still being listed as possibles. I mean, should, some horses drop out. On the Philly side, Kathleen O is a distinct, and I think we know this, even though there's the discussion about, who might go favored from a performance level standpoint for those that measure and utilize the figs that way. She stands out. She just does. And there's the obvious players in and around her as competition, but she's way the horse to beat. I mean, to me, it doesn't mean that Echo Zulu doesn't go favored and Secret Oath and Nest and I mean it's nostalgia. It's really engaging from that standpoint. But she is a little bit up on a pedestal, to my way of thinking. So opinions are starting to solidify. Opinions, let me get a couple of news things out of the way before we start handicapping. Marty is going to join us. We're going to get started and get rolling pretty quickly. So Marty in about 4 minutes, and I'll give you the lineup quick. Marty, and we'll do some Keeneland with Marty, as well as the post point scoring races, top 20, he and Jay Privman. Priv, of course, at 10 with the Derby Notebook, and Marty folding in some Keeneland opinions, but we'll get Marty's top 20 thoughts as well. Nick Tamaro early today. Nick's got a busy morning, so we'll get to Nick after Marty, and we got a bunch of things to do because it's opening night at Sam Houston Race Park for the Dashers, the quarter horse meet. So Nick, we'll see how much we'll see how many opinions. I don't know if he's got opinions for tonight's action, but maybe you have to wait for Sharpie time for that. But the quarter horse season starting at Sam Houston. So, Nick, on that front. But we will also do the cross-country pick five with Nick. And it incorporates the two stakes tomorrow at Aqueduct as the meet winds up. And it also, of course, has got the stakes, the three stakes. It's an all-stakes sequence. Again, almost every weekend it's been all stakes. The Apple Blossom, the Oaklawn, the Stallion Series, Times Square, the Woodhaven, and the Oaklawn Handicap is your cross-country pick five. And Nyree yesterday, you may have seen Dave Grenig's, did I retweet it? Nyree's going to pull a card from Keeneland's deck for a $3 pick three. It'll be the last three races of the day when we get over to Belmont. So there's a new wrinkle. Last three races, there'll also be the regular 50-cent pick three. But this is the latest new trend that came out of a lot of focus group conversations with players' committees, like the Breeders' Cup Players' Committee and Paul Matisse and company. Higher denomination wagers and the $3 all turf pick three that's been pretty well received, plus Derby Day, Breeders' Cup weekends. There's an increasing interest and variety of offerings on this. And, the turf one at Keeneland it's a fun wrinkle. Aside from that, Scott Shapiro after Nick. Jay Privman is mentioned, Scully in hour two as well. Hammer back in his famous 11 o'clock Eastern, his 11 o'clock Eastern slot. He's been away from it for a while. Callie Francois, and we didn't get to Callie last week ahead of the Laurel action, so I want to get her in because there's another nice five stakes again at Laurel tomorrow. If you haven't noticed, take a look. They got a nice card again tomorrow. At Laurel, and Popo, we'll get Popo in here with some form to win plays, and had a fun conversation with Alex, who is the form to win guru from Australia. He'll be coming stateside soon enough, and some really Popo and I keep kind of hinting along the lines that we're kind of waiting. Let's launch this thing. In addition to what is already available, which is very useful and helpful, this thing is going to be further enhanced in with a lot of other bells and whistles. Beside the speed algorithm, they're adding kind of a pace portion. There's going to be a ground loss element that you can tune, which gives it almost a sheet methodology concept. So Yeah, there's some really fun things coming with Form to Win. So we'll keep foreshadowing, but in the meantime, we'll do the work so you don't have to. But you can download the existing format, you know, the 1.0, I guess, and play with it. You get two free races a day and get a feel for it, because it's that, you know, yes, it's that AI concept, but it's got a little bit more going for it simply than, you know, the generic AI where you really don't know what their methodology is. You know, at least here we can tell you what the methodology is. And, you know, the initial version, it was speed. It was pure speed. We're going to speed into conversation with Marty. And as Casey raises him, I will tell you another very good day at OBS yesterday. Day four. They'll wrap it up today. The numbers are really strong. They've almost 73 million in 3 days. They're averaging 135,000 ahead by average. That's up 37%. The median is up almost 50%. The demand for quality horse flesh is really kind of like a frenzy, to be honest. 1.7 million, a new... not a new sale topper, but a session topper, 1.7 million. This Lane's End and West Point teaming up for this one. And there's some interesting stories out of this that we'll probably get to early next week, because there are some new buyers, fresh interest in the game with some new 2-year-old in training sale buyers. One from upstate New York, a guy by the name of Rich Schermerhorn, who's a developer. He's going to send some horses to Chad. Lauren Carlisle's been buying. Cherie DeVoe is buying for a new group that is looking for classic colts. It's very encouraging. New people coming into the game. Marty McGee does everything he can to get new players in and new owners. Good morning.
Hey, where are you, Bick?
Sanibel Island for another 16 or 18 hours.
Now that's over there, north of Naples?
Is it north of Naples or south of Naples? I'm not sure.
South.
It's right next to, it's Fort Myers, near Fort Myers.
Oh, yeah, so you're north, yeah.
All right. Yeah,
nice.
I had no idea.
I went there in 1982, I think.
82?
40 years ago. Yeah.
Holy cow.
That was my senior at UK spring break. Went to Sanibel. Actually, we went to Vanderbilt Beach, which is down near Naples. And then, a ways back, Vic.
Wow, that's the early versions of spring break. I can imagine that's throwback. It's really nice. My first time here, and we'll certainly be back. And I'll bring you a seashell. We literally have 27 pounds of shells that I'll be toting in the trunk of the car.
Can't wait.
Marty, let's get a couple of quick, you'll be done well before 9:35, because I got to get to Nick Tamer. We're in tight timing this morning. But let me get your first, here we are, points races are over, and you and Jay will join us at 10. Some thoughts on the top 20 as that stands right now as we start to track toward Derby.
Well, I mean, this is the third year that Jay and I have done this together, and the third year that I've made the line for it. I've gone out on a limb somewhat in making Zandon a slight favorite over Epicenter. If truth be told, if I could, if it wasn't chickening out, I would make them both like 9-2, but Dale Austin told me when I first came to the Sun back in 85, don't make any horse 9-2. It's like making them 7-1 or 11-1. Just don't do it. So you'll never see me make a horse 9-2. Anyway, I got Zandon 4-1 and Epicenter 5-1. Most people on their list, and I can understand this, have Epicenter the favorite. I just think there might be just a groundswell of support for Chad Pratt and the way that this horse closed so stoutly in winning the Bluegrass. So maybe I'll be wrong if I get a sense Derby week that it's going to be early because they draw the races on Monday before the Derby, both the Oaks and the Derby. Maybe I'll make Epicenter the favorite. I don't know. But, you know, I can't pull against Steve. He did me a big favor in making me his first call on the Midnight Bourbon tragedy on Wednesday morning. And what a sad thing that was, just listening to him spit out the words about, you know, the news. But anyway, going back to the Derby, this is a real, as Phil Thomas would say, it's a great Derby, but which one isn't? But this really seems to have, you know, maybe 8 or 10 viable contenders with a somewhat hazy, at this point, pace scenario, whereby it's a fascinating race.
The amount of horses on the grounds, I discussed that with Kevin Kirstein the other morning on Monday as we got out of the point system. We've got couple of things that have to be decided, including, you know, the scenario that has pending decisions on Morello and early voting. What's your read on where that stands?
Well, Chad told Dave Grinning, I think yesterday, that he's 60-40 in favor of going to the Preakness instead of the Derby with early voting, so that would eliminate him. Morello, you know, I don't see how you could come into the Derby off that really bad race in the wood, you know, albeit one with the viable excuse getting left. But he, you know, all indications from my viewpoint was that he was not going to be able to get the mile and a quarter anyway. So I think, you know, Steve already has Epicenter, which, you know, doesn't do anything for the owners of Morello. But nonetheless, you would not really think of him as a serious, you know, he's not one of the top 8 or 10 I was referring to. So if they come out, Pioneer of the Nile, I think, is next. Isn't that right on the list? Nicole Russo was there this morning. Pioneer of Medina, I call him Pioneer of the Nile. Did not work this morning. Todd Fletcher's hoping to work him Sunday morning. He backed off on him a little bit. Something about his blood didn't come back perfect. I don't know if that's a hiccup or not. But you know what? I don't know if you know that story I wrote on Eric Reed and his horse, who's right now 24, Rich Strike. He will at the very least, get on the AE list. And the horse's name will be in the Derby program. And that, you know, that unto itself for Eric is quite the achievement, even though the horse is one other than, and you know, he might be 99-1, our first one in 21 years, by the way. But I wouldn't mind seeing things happen whereby Rich Strike gets the run.
I totally agree, and have been tracking it and in contact with Eric. And after the fire, and after uncertainty about the ability to, you know, to keep the operation, keep the ball in the air, it's really encouraging. And so, if they can be part of the atmosphere, and he, you know, Eric also talked about Sonny Leone, and what that would mean. So there's a lot. You're right. I'm glad you. Just the opportunity to say nice things and draw attention to Eric is a good part of this. There were a couple of confirmations this week. Jay will touch on as well. He had the Rafi Bejarano and Doug O'Neill teaming up with Happy Jack. I saw the official confirmation that Jose Ortiz has got Simplification for Antonio Sano. I guess we only have two. I mean, in terms of a horse we know is running, Tawny Port. Where's Brad Cox with an assignment?
Sitting chilling, just like Shane Sellers would say. I'm dead to quarter pole, and I'm just waiting for things to unfold in front of him. But here comes old Sellers down the lane.
That's so great. All right. No,
same with Zozos and Tawny Port. He, you know, if something happens, you know, what if you can get Irad or, you know, or
yep.
Pratt or
yep.
something at the end. So what if you don't have to name anybody yet, why would you?
Well, that's a page taken from the Todd Fletcher book.
Everybody. Ron Anderson. Yep. All that.
Yep, there you go. All right. Well, we'll table Derby chatter until we get to Louisville. I'll be there on Sunday morning. Marty, let's shift gears to Keeneland and the Double Dog Dare later today. The racing has been fun. It's been competitive. The turf racing always adds to the undertaking. Give us some thoughts about today before we talk about tomorrow's card.
I mean, just every day is so good. I mean, it's so easy to cast superlatives at Keeneland these days because it's kind of like Kentucky Downs, except it's at Keeneland, which is, you know, better. And, you know, everybody's here to run and run their best and at their peak and all that. So I got a few minutes with Todd the other day for him to talk about Melisot, making her return here and why he would not have run her in either the Apple Blossom, which is a grade one, or the La Troyenne, which is a grade one. And he said, well, the timing of this was just kind of perfect. He didn't want to wait the extra 2 weeks for the Oaks Day race, the La Troyenne. Yeah, she's already got 3 grade ones in the bag. She's a champion. So everything is, he's working backward from the November, I guess it'd be November 5th, Breeders' Cup Distaff and getting her to run back in that race. So it'll be this and the Ogden Fifths, and then you got to assume something like the Personal Ensign and the Spencer or you know, the Beldame, something like that. She'll probably, I'm guessing, she'll have 5 races this year. And this is the starting point. She's, the way she ran, the way she closed in the Ashland last year, it's going to make her hard to go against. And she's handy enough, even though she did get pretty far back in the Breeders' Cup Distaff behind that wild pace. It sure seems like she'll be sitting a real nice strip behind a couple of long shots, Super Quick for Talamo and Lady Mystify for Pratt, and then Malathot and Crazy Beautiful ought to be right behind them. And I think that Johnny will be licking his chops. You know, I'm not going out on a limb. She's 4-5 on the line, probably maybe a tick below that. But it would seem like she will be the single for a lot of people in their end of card multis today at Keeneland.
Well, it's in addition to the double dog dare, and it does feel like that this is kind of a nice way to ease into the season. There's no need to necessarily, you know, start banging heads right off the mark. So the rest of that sequence, anything else in here that jumped off at you?
Well, let's turn to the Hermes pick, and my best bet is in race 5, Cruise Bay. And let's see what price that is on the line. It's a nice square 5-1 with Tyler Gaffalione. You know, by the way, I saw somebody compliment Tyler on Twitter today about how good he is. And it just takes me back to one day. It just struck me at Gulfstream. This is about 3 or 4 winters ago, and I was talking with Mark Cassidy. This is before they won the Preakness together with War of Will. I said, man, that guy's good. I mean, he really smooths them out, and he's just really a professional. And, you know, he's still in his 20s, and well, he's kicked some rear around here now for, what, 2.5 years. So, he, when you bet on Tyler, you're more than likely going to get a really good ride.
Well, there was the one trip last weekend on Chad's horse that he sort of buried. He did. I don't mean to cold water the compliment, but
Was that on the grass when he got stuck behind?
Yeah,
the bush, like forever. Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
At the same time, one of the Twitter smart guys put that Luis Saez should have won the race because, but he lost too much ground, and so I replied to him privately, of course, because I don't like to out people. I said, man, you need to give these guys a break. Should he have saved ground like Tyler did, you know, in the exact same race?
Yep.
So, anyway. Stuff's aggravating.
That was credit event. Credit event.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Let's dive in.
Talk about Saturday?
Yeah. I do want to talk about Saturday, but you also prompted something that I wrote down earlier in the week because you had tweeted, and this will probably be my best chance to mention it. Chuck Cuellas, his retirement, and I tried a few times to get Chuck to come on the show, and he's just reticent. But for those that, you know, have seen the name for years in the daily racing form, a lot of times as Hermes, I love Chuck's approach. He was always willing to be you know, putting 12 to 1, 15 to 1, 20 to 1 shots on top. A great identifier of long prices, and he'll be missed in the pages of the Daily Racing Form selection grid.
Yeah, Chuck Kehos. He's the inside baseball of our operation. He's our tech guy, our inside guy. Any kind of stat question, which would happen, you know, fairly frequently when I needed some kind of info that we couldn't readily obtain, Chuck was the first guy we would go to, and he will be sorely missed internally at Daily Racing Form. And beyond that, he's a swell human being and a nice guy. And you know, we're all getting old, Steve, and we're on the other side of midnight ourselves, but you hate to see him go. A guy like Chuck he's, you know, part of the nuts and bolts of our great operation.
Well, and I've done my best to give some exposure to those types, including Lonnie Goldfeder, who is, you know, another inside baseball guy. And I wish Lonnie would get back to his "What Was I Thinking" columns. Those were fabulous. That he would, you know, go back and rehash what went right, what went wrong about ticket structure and about handicapping approach. And Lonnie, another guy that is one of the important cogs in the DRF machinery. Well, I'm glad we got a chance to mention Chuck and his retirement. Let's take a look at tomorrow at Keeneland. Hit some highlights, Marty, and of course the features, the Ben Ally and the Elkhorn, and we do on an annual basis let you explain why it's the Ben Ally and not the Ben Ally.
Well, according to R. James Williams, the longtime publicity director at Keeneland, whenever I called it the Ben Ally, which we're all wanting to do because of Muhammad Ali and all that, he says it's the Ben Ally. And I actually looked up Ben Ally Hagen, who the 1886 Kentucky Derby winner is named for, and he was a man of great wealth back in the 1800s. This race is named in his honor. He was a noted breeder, and and the horse himself was named for him. So that's how it's called the Ben Ally. We all want to call it the Ben Ali, but it's not that. According to Jim Williams.
And I use that as my North Star when it comes to Ben Ally. The Ben Ally and the Elkhorn. How about a couple of opinions, Marty, on the late sequence?
I've got Scalding on top in the...
I like it.
In the Ben Ally, you know, he really got good over the winter in Florida for Shug. You know, there's probably four or five horses in here who deserve to win. Mighty Heart, the one-eyed Canadian hero, he's in there with a chance because there's not a lot of pace in there, Steve. He might, you know, try and walk the dog out front with Jimmy Graham. Warrant has really gotten good, got a 104 buyer in the... when barely beaten in the Santa Anita Handicap. Proxy making the third start off a layoff with a couple of good ones under his belt at Fairgrounds. So I've got a Scalding over Warrant with Dynamic One, who Todd kind of talked up a little bit to me the other day. Third.
Ooh. Interesting. Well, and of course you do have horses like Proxy and Warrant and you know, some horses that I just as easily could have gone in the Oakland Handicap. We'll talk about that with Hammer in a little bit, and I'm sure Scott Shapiro will look at the Oakland action as well. So's Nick, actually. All right, what about the Elkhorn?
I got Bema's Boy. He ran huge over the course the only time he...
Wow.
Only time he ever tried it. He's only 5-1 with Rispoli, who, you know, comes to us as a turf pro, polished turf pro from out in California. So I've got it... I've got Bema's Boy in a mild upset for Maker. Maker kind of flexed his muscles yesterday, running 1-2, one of those starter races on the grass. So I've got it Bema's Boy over Channel Maker, who does seem like the class of the field. You know, when he tries the grade ones, he's usually up against it in my mind. But I'm going to go Bema's Boy, Channel Maker, and another mystery in third in the grade two Elkhorn.
The seventh is a pretty weighty allowance going a mile and a 16th for the fillies and mares. Third level allowance. We only seem to get these at at Keeneland. And, you know, Gam's mission feels like she's way the filly to beat. I did think that if you were looking for a price, I thought that... who did I have in here as a price option? Market Rumor for Ian Wilkes, I thought, was worth a look.
Gam's mission for the aforementioned Cherie DeVoe is my best bet of the day. So I love the way that she closed in the regret here last spring. She hasn't won since then, but she's taken on some pretty nice fillies in the meantime. I think this is probably the right spot for her. Look out for Flippant, who really got good last summer for Vicki Oliver. You know, this kind of typifies racing at Keeneland, the depth of a race like this.
Well, Marty, I appreciate it. Appreciate the best bet option, and we'll do plenty more Keeneland as the morning unfolds, and I will see you early this week, Sunday, Monday. When am I going to see you at Churchill?
You still want to go to a Reds game? I mean, they're horrible.
Go to,
they're not
yeah.
bad. They're horrible.
It doesn't stop me. I love the red stockings, and I wouldn't mind. Wouldn't mind a run up to the Queen City.
The red leg. You know, they don't play in Crosley Field anymore, Vic.
I've never been to the new ballpark. I'll be looking around for those rubbery squishy things on the plaza at Riverfront.
China Good American Ballpark. Yeah, I've been there. You know, maybe a dozen times. It's all right. It's nice. It's like all the, they all kind of modeled after Camden Yards.
Yeah. Well, we will discuss this, and I will see you as early as Sunday.
All right, buddy. Talk to you.
Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee, and I'm the Reds. Yeah, I'm a little surprised that they're struggling. As Casey reaches for Nick, we'll mention also. I could have brought this up with Marty, but I want to cross it off the list. The works opportunity for anybody to come to Churchill starts tomorrow through Wednesday, the 4th. Of Derby Week, open free of charge, 7 to 10 a.m. The special Derby Oaks worker session is 7:30 to 7:45. If you're coming to the Ville for the first time and are looking forward to it, make sure you get there. You know, try to get there like 7:15 at least, so you can, you know, make your way into the building and find a place in the stands to or down. You can watch down from the, you know, against the track apron, but 7 to 10, free of charge. Come to Churchill and watch not just the Derby workers, but plenty of other interesting horses. It seems every year when we're gearing up for Derby, other runners that, you know, this was the sessions that first displayed Teppan. Teppan burst on the scene for everybody during the workout sessions that year. Nick Tamaro bursting on the scene on the morning of the highly anticipated SHRPQH. The quarter horse season starts tonight. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm good.
You're anticipating the quarter horse meet, I can tell.
Oh, somebody stopped me on the beach this morning. I was doing an early morning beat. They said the quarter horse season starts at Sam Houston today, right? Yep. I said, I'll be talking to Nick later.
Well, and more importantly, I think everybody's gearing towards that 10:30 a.m. Central Time start we have on Derby Day. I mean, hell with the Derby. That's what everybody's rocking and rolling for. I'm gonna set up a blow-up mattress in my office so that I can just stay the night before. It's going to be a blast.
I didn't realize you guys were doing one of those. Eric Hallstrom has also pioneered some of those early morning some of the international tie-ins very cleverly. So that'll be exciting. So you'll have a very full 36 hours Friday, Saturday, Oaks Day.
It will. I think it really caught Frank Hoff's attention when I came home from Belmont last year, and I said when Belmont's card started, there were two tracks on the TVs around the Garden Terrace at Belmont and Indiana Grand. And so it became clear at that point that doing the early start, it will really have no effect on our live business, because the people that arrive for the Derby will catch the end of the card anyway, and it will help the export by a ton. So, I can't scoff at it too much, because I suppose I have some level of responsibility. So, should be pretty exciting.
Well, give everybody the rest of the lay of the land for the quarter horse season, how it unfolds.
Yeah, the big nights are June 4th. That's going to be Sam Houston's Futurity. We've got the trials for that coming up the weekend between the Derby and Preakness. Sam Houston Derby is around the same time, closing night, June 18th. We've got a big slate of stakes races, so should be a lot of fun. If you're looking for a nighttime track and you can stomach the quarter horse racing, I think it's interesting, and I'll probably try and identify as many as possible on the broadcast that have had tough trips, because there is actually a big opportunity handicapping wise for tough trips. So it's a matter of weaving your way through some kind of tiny pools and not putting yourself in bad positions. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. We usually start the card off with an 870 race, and if I can figure out how many are stacked across the track, that's usually the biggest challenge of all. And we'll be running Friday, Saturday this week and next week, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday from May 5th until June 18th. And the week of the Belmont Stakes, there will be a guest announcer in the booth, because I'm going to the Belmont Stakes as I always do. Jessica Paquette will be down to call 3 days worth of quarter horse racing, and I know she's very excited about that. So, depending on whether we have a Triple Crown on the line at the Belmont, that might be the next biggest story in racing.
I can't believe she's taking work away from Chris Griffin.
Chris Griffin, the backup announcer to the Stars. Chris probably would have seen if we could have zoomed him in and he could have called the race via satellite. This is light work for Chris. So, yeah.
And, of course, as promised, Trey Styles, don't forget Sharpie time, and Trey's really gotten into the quarters, so you'll get the benefit of his analysis as well. Let's get the benefit of yours as we arc toward a couple of placeholder weekends, this weekend and next, Nick, and we'll talk about the Oaklawn action and the two stakes at Aqueduct for the cross-country pick five. A quick aside, though, for some Derby overview, as we stand 2 weeks out.
Yeah, I think it's time. I heard you saying as I was coming on that, we'll get into the workout sessions a little bit more in earnest over the next couple of weeks, and those are always pivotal. And you referenced Tepin, who you were talking about early, given the way she was training back in 2015, and I think it's very, very important to follow those. It's very important to find the person that you trust, though, because there are going to be a lot of charlatans out there making comments about workouts that you want to just completely ignore. But, anything, I think some of the people that you have on the show are really, that's a great place to start, because a lot of people are laying eyes on these horses first time around. And the other thing to remember is that they're all generally going to look good, because they are all good. So, but I do think it's a worthy endeavor in terms of keeping up with it. I've been looking at some of the figures. I made a set of PPs, and certainly don't have anything that's jumped out by any means, but I do think once you get past Epicenter, it's a pretty evenly matched group. I don't have a horse that I'm trying to talk myself out of wanting to like Cyberknife, and I think the reason why I like him is because he seems to be so handy. He's just slow. He's slow compared to some of the other good horses in this crop, but he's not necessarily slow on every figure. He's a little slow on final time figures and a little slow on pace figures too, but I do think he's a horse that can take a step forward for a barn that I really trust. So, I mean, if I was going to make an early pick, it would probably be him, but it's a fun bunch. I mean, I don't know what to do with these two horses from California. I think that depending on the draw, I think Messier is probably going to get that Johnny V type of trip forwardly placed, if not on the lead, and there's not a ton of speed in there, and if early voting doesn't go, then you're probably talking about a pace that involves, two, three speed horses and Taba, who wants to sit. So you're talking about Zozos, Messier, and maybe one other horse that's really going to make a strong bid for the lead. This was a race that, 4 weeks ago looked like it could be run at an absolutely frenetic early pace, and it just doesn't seem that way. And I'll tell you what, Steve, I have been burned for years now, assuming that this was going to be a fast-paced race that came apart. Not this time.
I agree, and I'll tell you that I got a chance this morning when I woke up. I saw that that Thorograph had set up the probables for Oaks and Derby for the sheets at 1 a.m. And so my first glance at the final set, I had accumulated most of the numbers, over the last, 6 weeks. But when you get to see them all together, the horse that you just mentioned that is going to be the forgotten horse into this is Messier. And you're to put this in Rotisserie League baseball parlance, he is a post-hype opportunity because he's going to get shunted down, I think. I think he's been sort of, in the aftermath and the wake of Taba Mania. Messier, clean your glasses, folks, and take a very, very hard look because he's coming in as the fastest participant.
Yeah, I noticed that. I'm actually scrolling through the what you just referenced, and he paired up his figure from February, and I guess because we all expect, and I shouldn't say we, there's a large contingent of people that are active on social media that expect every horse to win every race, and when they lose, it's like, how could they possibly have the nerve? But horses lose sometimes, and I'm going to let you know the secret, which you already know. Sometimes a horse that loses actually runs better than a horse that wins. Now, I'm not saying that Messier ran better than Taba. Taba ran the best. He ran extremely well. But Messier ran really well, too. And, this is a scenario where I think Johnny V puts him on the lead and starts trying to dictate terms to everybody else. And that makes him very, very dangerous. And if we're relying on Summer Is Tomorrow or, maybe a better breaking Morello to put pressure on this horse early in addition to Zozos, then I'm not sure I'm buying that. I don't think that's the direction I'm going, and I do think Messier's the kind of horse that can get out there and start to lay down some fractions that make him dangerous.
And should mention, I guess that if let's say early voting does not participate, and Marty just referenced the 60-40 against suggestion from Chad Brown to Dave Grenick, then the horse that immediately gets in does have some speed, and that's Pioneer Medina. But he's got, he's got sort of vanguard speed as opposed to, point speed. And the one thing that is notable about Pioneer Medina, he's one of the handful of horses coming into this that's been a mile and 3/16. I know it's a modest added ground element, but it don't hurt.
Yeah, there have been a lot of Todd horses like this. Noble Indy comes to mind, and he had the horse last year that had run second in the race at Turfway, and they looked like, oh, well, that horse is definitely going to be forwardly placed, and then they drew the 18, and their jockey set him up 3 or 4 wide down the straightaway, and they just made no impact whatsoever. So, you're right. I mean, he has the speed to be dangerous if he's drawn maybe towards the inside and wants to force the issue a little bit. The conversation about the horses that have been the distance, I think, is interesting because it shouldn't be coincidental that the fact that last year's Louisiana Derby ended up being as productive as it did, and actually the entire Louisiana Trail, I think it probably did have something to do with the distance. And I don't think we got a fair shake on that in 2020. So 2021 was really the first time that series was run at the extended distances. And I think as time goes by, it's going to prove to be a good move. Look, it certainly drew the Risen Star field was phenomenal. So the fact that many trainers and connections were interested in going a mile and an eighth in mid-February, I think says a lot about the quality of that race and maybe the whole design. So it's a factor, I think, for sure. And really, I mean, one of the things that I'm probably doing flippantly is ignoring the fact that the favorite in this race has a ton of speed. So, I mean, I don't think Joel is going to be he's not going to be inclined to get into a situation where he's raiding Epicenter while Messier is just cruising along on the lead, because Epicenter is much too fast for that. So that's the difference between a situation like 2021, when the favorite was always going to need things to to set up a little bit for him, and they did, versus 2022, where the favorite is capable of then kind of turning things around on everybody else. So it makes for a fascinating race, and one that that I think now that you dig into it more and more, you realize it's a very evenly matched bunch.
Exactly. And I'll make one final distance reference when it comes to the trip from Fairgrounds to Churchill. Technically, the final elements, the final portion of the race, those horses are cutting back in distance from a stretch of 1,308 feet in New Orleans to 1,234 feet at Churchill. And that's just a fact. I mean, it's not a lot of ground, but it's another little wrinkle. So, FYI.
The Fairgrounds and its endless stretch, yes, has certainly gobbled up plenty of front runners over time. I do think, in general, I think Churchill is probably a slightly less speed-favoring track than Fairgrounds, but we'll see. I mean, I also am of the opinion that taking 2020 out of the equation, but a number of these years where we have this interminable wait between the last dirt race and the Kentucky Derby, there's an argument to be made that the track profile has changed during that time. So I think that's something to keep in mind a little bit as well. Don't assume it's going to happen, but I have bet a lot of off-the-pace horses that have had a lot of difficulty making an impact, and I've abandoned that endeavor.
Let's turn our attention to tomorrow and the opportunity combining the three stakes at Oaklawn with the three stakes in New York. And speaking of, high-level confrontations, there's five that are going to line up seemingly in the Apple Blossom, and one just trying to get fifth, just seemingly trying to get some black type to her name, but four very familiar and accomplished fillies and mares in the Apple Blossom starts the cross country pick five.
I would say that if you're only going to have five, it's nice to have three that look like real contenders. That being said, I have a very hard time believing CC can beat Latruska at a mile of a 16th. And I don't agree with this whole, she was fooling around with them late, and she was just toying with them type of deal in the Azari. CC's a better horse going one turn. So I don't think she's a win chance at all. I think Latruska's biggest worry is Clairiere, because Clairiere made a bunch of horses that she was supposed to look bad. And it's nothing against the balance of that field. She was 1-10. She's also racing with Lasix for the first time, which she is again. And I don't know how much of a factor I want to make that, but she seems like the kind of horse that if Latruska maybe gets a bit of a challenge, things could get a little problematic, but who's giving Latruska a bit of a challenge here? I mean, Miss Imperial, if truly being ridden to get a piece, she's not going to chase Latruska hard. She's going to sit back and try and pick off what could be a couple of weary runners in the stretch, and that's going to put Latruska alone on a very, very easy lead. I mean, pace figure-wise, she is way faster than any of these horses early, even in races where she's been able to withstand early pressure. So I think 7-5 is probably very generous. I'm expecting more like 3-5. And, other than the Breeders' Cup, which I think you don't want to really hold against her, until dethroned, this is the horse that really sits atop this division very firmly. So I would use Latruska as a lone A, and I'd probably have one backup with Clairiere to get things started.
All right, we go to the Oaklawn Stake, which had originally been a meet-ending Derby Day event, and this is a funny a funny cast of seven. As I went horse by horse, I thought this is a more and more curious bunch the more I looked.
Yeah, it's kind of a silly little race, but I've had a problem my entire life with saying the things that most people think. But the interesting horse in it, based on his last performance, is Happy Boy Rocket, because he was 5-2 in a race that I guess theoretically was a prep for this. It was only a week ago, and I don't know if Biff Gilmott necessarily knew that this race was even coming up, but he's running him back. Frank Fletcher's obviously an Arkansas guy, and he wants his horses to run at Oaklawn as much as possible. He was 5-2, and he had some gate issues, and then he stood in the gate when the field left. And so he kind of just went around there almost in an effort to gain some experience. This is the second straight time this horse had trouble getting out of the gate and ended up really affecting his performance. The race that he won back in late January looked like it was relatively weak in terms of the runbacks. Complete Agenda finally got broke through for his maiden yesterday. Actually ran pretty well at Aqueduct and got a 77 buyer. So, I mean, he didn't turn heads or anything, but showed that he's a horse that's at least moving a little bit forward. I thought I would definitely use Happy Boy Rocket. I have no issue with him. Brad Cox has Homebrew back off a layoff. He kind of looks like the main speed. He's probably the horse to beat on paper. Jose Ortiz is on board. I think you can count on a forwardly placed trip. Kuchar for Rudy Brissett finally broke through last time out. The blinkers are now going on. He was kind of all over the place in the stretch. I have to tell you, Steve, I would have bet anything that Stellar Tap was going to go on to be a marquee two-year-old and three-year-old, and he stinks. Andy Serling tortures me over my joke that Stellar Tap was going to win the two-year-old Eclipse, and he hasn't even won a one other than. So, and I deserve it. But he just hasn't moved on, you know. And I know he didn't have the cleanest of trips last time out, and Ruggs was kind of loose on an easy lead. But I wonder if maybe Stellar Tap has a turf engagement down the line, and because he's got a huge, huge pedigree on the damn side for turf. That was part of the reason why I thought he was going to be that good, was because he ran so well on dirt first time out. So I'd probably avoid him on the A line and maybe just make him a backup, because you're going to need to create some value in the sequence somewhere. The two Aqueduct races look like they could be pretty chalky.
Fair enough. Let's stay at Oaklawn. The anchor leg actually is the handicap, and the handicap is good. This is a fun race.
It is. It's very evenly matched. I mean, if Plainsman is 5-2, then you're lining up to bet, right? And I have plenty of respect for Plainsman. Fearless is the horse to beat. You know, Todd has kept him in the friendly confines of Gulfstream for a while. He completely laid over his rivals in the Ghost Zapper. And what I like about the effort that day is that he got a little bit more into the bit early. And I think that the Gulfstream Park Mile and the Fred Hooper were always going to be tough asks for him against a horse like Speaker's Corner, in part because Speaker's Corner is very quick. And so the fact that he was able to get an early position ahead of Fearless, who's really this sort of lumbering oaf of a horse that, you know, especially with Sayas on, because Sayas is all arms, as a jockey, you feel like he's being ridden right from the start. So I think he's really at his best at a mile and an eighth, perhaps, and beyond. So I think he's a very likely winner here. But it's no fait accompli. I think it's a race where you would want to use a couple of other options. I fear that Rated R Superstar's opportunity was last time, and that he's probably not going to get quite as good a setup. But he's going to get some setup, and I mean, you don't want to exclude him at 5 or 6-1. I thought Last Samurai cutting back might be a little bit interesting as a long shot bomb, maybe more for an underneath slice, as Dallas Stewart is known for picking up. And I don't want to give up on Thomas Shelby just yet. I hope that they ride him so that he's got a little bit more of a cushion early. And even if they have to go, you know, to me, one of Thomas Shelby's best races was the mile and a 16 starter allowance race that he ran last year at Churchill, where he set a fast pace. And, you know, this is that same conversation we have over and over and over. You know, as Richard Migliori likes to say, it's not how fast you're going, but how you're going fast. And if Thomas Shelby just wants to go fast and try and bottom them out, I think he actually has a big chance, because it's going to make all of those horses, like Fearless and some of the late runners, have to go that much quicker early to stay close.
The Oaklawn Handicap ends at 6:41 as the Eastern Time post. And in between the Oaklawn Stake and the Oaklawn Handicap, you've got the two New York races, the Times Square for the Stallion Series and the Woodhaven. What are we doing there?
Well, the Times Square looks like, I mean, it is Barese's race to lose. He's coming back in 2 weeks after running in the Wood Memorial, shortening up from 9 furlongs to 6.5, and shouldn't be a big problem. There's enough speed in here. Unique Unions on the inside has enough early foot to set things up, so too Tommy Gunn. So I think they'll go quick enough. And Barese, I have been to Bari. Bari is the home of the Tomb of St. Nicholas. So very, very nice to see that angle. Yeah, and Barese is a horse that has shown some real talent early in his career, I would say. So looking forward to seeing him cut back in distance. I think he's probably going to be best around one turn, 6.5 to a mile. So this is the right kind of trip. And he's a horse, he's a pretty short price, is what I was referencing before about there being some short-priced horses later on in the sequence. Now, I do think the Woodhaven is interesting, and you have You have unanimous consent as a likely favorite coming in off a win in a one other than at Tampa, and he didn't exactly get a ton of pace to run at that day. I thought he ran well, all things considered. Between Sean Sue and Dr. Jeff, there should be pace. I'm not certain, though, that I would want to go with unanimous consent over Fort Washington. I think Fort Washington is at least as likely a winner. Heaven Street got such a good ride and trip last time out. I don't know if I would back him again. I actually think I would prefer Fort Washington of those that pair from Tampa. And so I would mainly use the 4 and 6 here. And I'll tell you what, Steve, I don't think Musetta is without chance. Coming back off a layoff, might end up needing a race. But this is a horse who really improved in his second two turf starts. And I'm not going to beat up on Eric Cancel. He gets plenty of it. But when he is coming off a turf horse and somebody else is getting on, it's an upgrade. So I like Dylan getting on this horse.
It's a very playable sequence. And as you mentioned, you can reach for in certain spots for prices, seemingly the last two, maybe the last two legs. Go narrow in the Apple Blossom and the Times Square, and spread a little bit more.
Kind of mix and match in the others. Yeah. I think that's the way to play it. But no, it is not overwhelmingly difficult. And you know, I think if you have a decent opinion in that Oaklawn or the Oaklawn handicap, and you can end up maybe putting a 5-6 to 1 in there, that could make the whole sequence.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM 1215, of course, and tonight the start of the quarter horse meet at Sam Houston, and we'll catch up with Nick as we get closer to Derby, and we usually do a Derby morning line session with Nick as well, and the pace quadrants, one of the favorite segments of Nick every year, and we can never have too much Nick.
Sure to endeavor to make everybody tired of me. That's the best way to handle anything anything involving a big racing event.
Nick, I appreciate it.
Have a great weekend, my friend. Good luck.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Nick's, you got it. I know he's got something with the baby this morning, so he's off to that. And let's take a break here. Top of the hour. Perfect timing. We're going to swap out Scott Shapiro. I'll get to Jay right on the mark. And Jay and I probably have to do a little bit of hockey. Word has come this morning that Canadiens legend Guy Lafleur has passed. He's fought cancer for a decade. And, 70 years old. And anybody of my age, Jay's age, certainly, that is a hockey fan, you grew up in awe. He was unbelievable and so special in a long line of special habitants. I got to meet him. I met him one of the last games, second to last game ever in the Forum. I also got to meet Henri and Maurice Richard. In fact, I got their autographs on a ticket. Second to last game of the Montreal Forum. Take a break, coming right back. Hour 2, weekend preview at the races, brought to you by Twin Spires. Jay Privman next. We've got Scully and Shapiro to follow, and much more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
Experience the all-new Paddock Suite at Saratoga Racecourse. Available for groups of up to 80 guests, the venue features a climate-controlled lounge overlooking the Saratoga Paddock. Visit naira.com/Saratoga to book your group outing today.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and